continue to target protesters in a violent crackdown that has killed at least 60 people this week. Earlier Wednesday, the head of the ruling Transitional Military Council said military leaders were ready to resume talks with protest leaders with no restrictions. He also said those responsible for the deadly breakup of the 8-week-old sit-in outside the defense ministry in central Khartoum will be held accountable. More than 2,000 cases of the Ebola virus have hit the Democratic Republic of Congo. With more than 1,300 dead, this Ebola outbreak is the second deadliest in history. The Ministry of Health says the fight against the deadly virus is being helped by improved security and containment of the disease. Russia has denied it informed President Trump that it is pulling defense personnel out of Venezuela. This contradicts a tweet by Mr. Trump earlier this week. Trump in March said Russia has to get out of the South American nation after it landed planes carrying supplies and technical advisors to help President Nicolas Maduro amid an uprising. The United States is seeking the ouster of Maduro, an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, as thousands of Venezuelan citizens take to the streets to protest his regime. The most senior Catholic convicted of child sex abuse has asked an Australian appeals court to reverse his conviction. He was found guilty of molesting two choir boys more than 20 years ago. AP's Karen Chamas reports.
Pope Francis's former finance minister was convicted in December of orally raping a 13-year-old choir boy and indecently dealing with the boy and the boy's 13-year-old friend in the 1990s. Australian Cardinal George Pell's lawyers argued that he could not have molested the two choir boys in an Australian cathedral undetected moments after Sunday masses while he was dressed in an archbishop's robes. The 77-year-old cardinal wore a black suit and a black shirt with a cleric's collar when he appeared for the Victoria State Court of Appeal hearing before three judges. He came and went from the court as the sole occupant of a prison van. He said nothing during the hearing. I'm Karen Chamas.
Activists marking World Environment Day are calling for action to tackle air pollution, which researchers say kills millions of people every year and impoverishes societies struggling to reduce its harmful effects. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization considers air pollution the world's largest single environmental health risk, killing about 7 million people every year. Millions more suffer long-term health problems such as asthma, stroke, lung cancer, and heart disease.
And that's Lisa Schlein reporting. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
there are lots of reports and lots of rumors of RSF shooting people in the various neighborhoods, of continued violence, even entering people's houses, but it's very, very difficult to confirm these allegations.
That's reporter Jason Patinkin discussing reports of security forces cracking down on protesters in Sudan's capital Khartoum. Details coming up. Also, we will examine a report by Freedom House on press freedom and democracy around the world. Also, an international aid group has identified the conflict in Cameroon as the world's top neglected refugee crisis. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Freedom House is an independent watchdog organization dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. Today, it has released its annual report on free press. VOA Salem Salamon has been monitoring the report and is in studio to brief us on the matter. Welcome to African News Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Salem, what is the gist of the report?
Well, the headline from the report is Freedom and the Media and a Downward spiral. So Freedom House is concerned about the freedom of the press in some of the world's largest democracies. Here's an excerpt from the report. Large segments of the population are no longer receiving unbiased news and information. This is not because journalists are being thrown in jail, as might occur in authoritarian settings. Instead, the media have fallen prey to more nuanced efforts to throttle their independence. Common methods include government-backed ownership changes, regulatory and financial pressure, and public denunciations of honest journals. So what this means is journalism is in danger because of financial pressure from troubled business model, a lack of trust from public, and pressure from media owners with political agenda.
But what are the areas they're most concerned about?
So there's a lot of concern. Freedom House found that among the countries it had previously rated as quote-unquote free, meaning they have free, vibrant press, 19% or 16 countries have experienced a reduction in their press freedom scores over the past 5 years. And many of these countries are in a global west, in the global west. So press freedom scores in Europe dropped by 8% since 2014. The group also expressed concern that China is expanding in overseas influence operations through cable television and newspaper ownership. So they noted that in September 2018, with an example of partially owned by China, a newspaper in South Africa disconnected a weekly column after its author about internment in camps in, of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang in China. And so similarly, Chinese television distribution firms, the Star Times, operates in Kenya, in Nigeria, in Uganda, in Zambia, and distributes content that meets the approval of the Chinese government. So these were some of the concerns.
Too many negative reports. Is there any good news?
Well, there's some good news.
Okay.
Since 2014, Sub-Saharan Africa has seen some slight increase in press freedom scores, rising by 3%. Some of the examples that Freedom House pointed to: Ethiopia, which has opened up, and also the Gambia, having made particular gains following changes in leadership. So the Gambia was coming out of years and years of dictatorship under Yahya Jammeh. Freedom of expression in the press is beginning to return to the country. The new government is modernizing its media laws to allow greater freedom, and private media organizations and journalists are returning to the country, similar to what's happening in Ethiopia.
So looking forward, what is the big picture trend?
Overall, Freedom House expressed concern. So they are viewing a global trend of populism, ideal extremism in numerous countries, including Hungary, Austria, and others. And they found that many of these countries are seeing a rise in populist or nationalist parties, which are extremely mistrustful of the media and the rights of the press. And additionally, there's been a rising distrust of the public, of institutions, including the press. So people don't trust what they see and read. So this is making them more vulnerable to what they call quote-unquote fake news or ideologically slanted news. So it's also making the public more likely to accept restrictions on the traditional press.
VOA Salem Salamon, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
An international aid group has identified the conflict in Cameroon as the world's top neglected refugee crisis. Each year, the Norwegian Refugee Council lists crises in which at least 200,000 people are displaced. This year, of 36 such crises, 7 of the top 10 are in Africa, including the top 4, Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Central African Republic, and Burundi. Cameroon's conflict involves the English and French-speaking regions. The council says violence has caused 500,000 people to be displaced in the southwest and northwest Cameroon. Health workers are fearful of violence, and over 780,000 children have seen their schools closed. More than 1 million people are in need of aid. The group says, although there are so many needs, there is no humanitarian aid effort and no major negotiating plan to get the parties involved to stop the fighting. Aid groups note that not since World War II have so many people been displaced, with an estimated 68.5 million people fleeing war and persecution worldwide. The ruling military council in Sudan has ordered soldiers to surround government buildings and guard roads. The head of the transitional military council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has halted further negotiations with opposition representatives. He also has called for a government to be formed and elections to be held within 9 months. The council said it regrets the events of Monday, in which at least 60 people were killed and hundreds wounded, according to doctors allied with the protesters. However, the council blamed the opposition for the failure to reach agreement on a transitional government after the ouster of longtime president Omar al-Bashir. The military and opposition groups recently broke off negotiations aimed at establishing a temporary government to lead the country until elections can take place. Now, security forces known as the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, are deployed in the streets in an effort to impose order. To find out more about the security situation in the capital, my colleague Mario Ritter spoke with reporter Jason Patinkin in Khartoum.
Well, in terms of security, I mean, the streets are controlled by the RSF. The Rapid Support Forces, which is the militia that essentially controls Khartoum now and is accused of atrocities in Darfur and other places. And they're, of course, accused of carrying out the massacre on Monday. So moving around Khartoum is not easy. In some neighborhoods, there are lots of roadblocks set up, bricks, stones, trees, you know, metal signposts, garbage, burning tires, to try to block the RSF from entering with their vehicles. And then other areas, there's just a lot of presence of the RSF moving about. It's very hard to confirm what's happening, but there are lots of reports and lots of rumors of RSF shooting people in the various neighborhoods, of continued violence, even entering people's houses, but it's very, very difficult to confirm these allegations. But the city is right now living in fear.
What has the Military Transitional Council, what have they said?
To the citizens, I don't know if there's any instructions they're giving to the citizens. They basically claimed that the operation was a success, but they also said that there were some problems and that they will investigate these. It's unclear where this is going. Right now, people are angry. People are mourning their dead. They're caring for their wounded. And people want the revolution to continue, but it's very difficult to see how it can continue with the massive show of force and use of force in Khartoum right now.
Opposition leaders are on the record calling for massive civil disobedience. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the roadblocks are civil disobedience, right? They're blocking the streets. They're trying to restrict the movement of the military forces. I don't think people are staying at the barricades the way they used to because they fear being shot or beaten, that sort of thing. The other thing is that it's now the Eid al-Fitr holiday, which lasts basically the rest of the week. So nobody's working anyways. All offices are closed anyways. People are at home. They're not celebrating really this year. It's a very difficult Eid. But the real test of the call for civil disobedience, I think, will be after the holiday ends, whether or not people go back to work, whether or not people stay home instead and voice their displeasure that way. This action by the government carried out by the Rapid Support Forces has angered the population and really hardened people's views against the military government. That said, I haven't heard any calls for armed struggle. I haven't heard any calls for violent uprising. That seems to be off the table.
That was my colleague Mario Ritter speaking with reporter Jason Patinkin in Khartoum. Patinkin said he also went to Royal Care Hospital, where witnesses said security forces attacked the healthcare center yesterday while injured protesters were being treated. They said the Rapid Support Forces, a militia from Darfur, led by the Transitional Military Council's deputy chief, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, assaulted both demonstrators and doctors. They said the RSF returned to the hospital later as reporters were talking with patients who hid in fear. Doctors say many people injured in the crackdown are recuperating at home. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports 96 refugees and migrants freed from the Zintan detention center in Libya's capital Tripoli are being kept in a safe place until they can be transported out of the country. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The group of refugees and migrants released on Monday is originally from Somalia, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. They include two newborn babies. The UN Refugee Agency reports they are being well cared for in a facility that will shelter them until they are able to leave the country. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says his agency is providing them with food, shelter, medical care, and psychosocial support to help them deal with the trauma of their recent detention.
Conditions in Zintan are dire. Living areas were severely overcrowded and lack proper ventilation. In some parts of the center, toilets are overflowing and are in urgent need of repair. As a result, solid waste and garbage has piled up inside the cell for days and presents a serious health threat.
Security in Tripoli is deteriorating as fighting between the Libyan government and a rebel commander continues without end. The UNHCR reports some 3,000 asylum seekers and migrants remain trapped in government detention centers. Many were brought there after their boats were rescued or intercepted off the coast. Balash says UNHCR would like to get all the refugees and migrants released, but convincing the authorities to do so is not possible. Instead, he says, the agency tries to help the most vulnerable. Balash says asylum seekers cannot go back to their countries of origin, so places have to be found for them in other countries willing to take them.
We can take refugees and asylum seekers to Niger, but then we need a speedier process in terms of finding lasting solutions for them out of Niger, and as well we are calling on many countries in Europe and beyond to help us find legal pathways for these desperate people who are caught up in these dire conditions inside Libya.
The spokesman says the UNHCR is seeking countries to accept the newly freed migrants, but that no date for their departure has been set. He says that in the past, freed migrants have been flown mainly to Niger or to Italy and Romania. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening, 20 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Democratic Republic of the Congo's health ministry says the number of Ebola cases in the eastern part of the country has surpassed 2,000. The 1,346 deaths make it the second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history. And a recent surge in new cases raises concerns about the ability to bring the outbreak under control and keep it from spreading to other countries. The Ministry of Health says the fight against the deadly virus is being helped by improved security attacks from local militias, and distrust of health workers have complicated the response to the disease in an active conflict zone. Tariq Jasarevic, spokesman for the World Health Organization, talks about the string of attacks on Ebola treatment centers that have killed five aid workers, causing setbacks in the containment efforts.
Every time there is a security incident, we are not able to provide services and go into community. We are not able to vaccinate. We are not able to treat those who are ill. We are not able to follow up on those who may have been exposed to the virus.
The U.S. government, the U.S. government Centers for Disease Control provide support for the international intervention, and now is in the process of stepping up its involvement. Tim Zimmer, acting assistant administrator for the U.S. Agency for International Development, told Congress about a six-point plan for what he called a broader, more holistic humanitarian approach.
First, we're working to improve coordination among the DRC government, WHO, and our international partners. I'm pleased to say that over the last week to 10 days, significant change is underway to accomplish that objective. Secondly, we are emphasizing and addressing the paramount importance of community engagement and local ownership. Third, we are working with the newly appointed UN Ebola Response Coordinator, Mr. David Gressley, to bolster security coordination through non-militarized humanitarian approaches. And fourth, we're working with CDC to implement operational improvements in the public health response, including a forward-leaning vaccine strategy. Fifth, we're looking at the Ebola readiness in Goma and along the Goma-Bentembo corridor, as well as the four countries to the east. And lastly, we're engaged in a longer-term planning scenario for stabilization and development to address the root causes of fragility in the region.
In addition, U.S. Representative Karen Bass, a Democrat from California, has proposed legislation to support USAID's efforts.
This administration has an opportunity and an obligation to try and stop the deadly outbreak, and that's why we're having this hearing, and I'm introducing the Ebola Eradication Act of 2019, which would authorize USAID to assist with Ebola efforts in the DRC. Lastly, I believe that it is imperative that we not let Ebola reach Goma, because if it does, it's highly probable that it will reach Rwanda, Uganda, Ethiopia, and South Sudan, oh my goodness, and that would have an effect on humanitarian efforts, peace and security, and economic trade.
The current outbreak was reported last August. The fight against Ebola has been bolstered by a vaccine that has proved highly effective and new treatments that have helped some patients recover. Still, the disease has killed two-thirds of those who have contracted it. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Twenty-four past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The ruling military council in Sudan has ordered soldiers to surround government buildings and guard roads. And an international aid group has identified the conflict in Cameroon as the world's top neglected refugee crisis. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility on an attack in a second southern African country as it tries to expand its influence and operations on the continent. Islamic State issued a statement yesterday claiming involvement in an apparent gunfight with the Mozambique's military in Cabo Delgado province. The northern province, which is the focus of major natural gas projects, has been the scene of attacks by armed Islamist groups that have killed 150 to 200 people since October 2017. Islamic State claimed its fighters repulsed an army attack in the locality of Metubi using a variety of weapons to kill and wound an unspecified number of troops, then seizing weapons, ammunition, and rockets that were left behind.
Its claim has not been verified. The Mozambican government and military declined to confirm any rebel activity. Islamic State has claimed two attacks in the northeastern Democratic Republic of the Congo since April. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyu Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa both won. But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association finals resume later Wednesday night in Oakland, California. That's where the defending champion Golden State Warriors will host the Toronto Raptors in Game 3 of the Best of 7 Championship Series, which is tied at 1-1. With a look back at Game 2 in Toronto, here's the AP's John Letherby.
The Warriors' 109-104 victory came as a result of a Raptors drought to start the second half. Golden State scored the first 18 points of the third quarter, easily erasing a 5-point Toronto halftime lead. The Splash Brothers were front and center in the win. Klay Thompson had 25 points before leaving with a hamstring injury. Steph Curry added 23 points, 7 of those in that third quarter.
Everybody's involved, whether they're scoring or setting screens or, you know, making the assist or whatever the case is. Everybody feels good, and and the vibe is just solid.
Kawhi Leonard was the game and Toronto's high scorer. He had 34 points, including going 16 for 16 from the free throw line. Game 3 is in Oakland on Wednesday night. John Leatherby, Toronto.
Thanks, John. John mentioned how Kawhi Leonard was Toronto's high scorer in Game 2 with 34 points. Kawhi says it's crucial the Raptors get off to a good start in Oakland in Game 3.
I got the sixth man with the crowd, but we just have to buy into ourselves and come out hard, strong, no mistakes, no turnovers, and the same thing you got to do at home.
That's three-time NBA All-Star Kawhi Leonard of the Toronto Raptors. Kawhi is known not just for his scoring, but for his defense. In fact, Kawhi won the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year award consecutively in 2015 and 2016. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Nigeria Basketball Federation says officials have completed the scouting of prospective players for the national team in the United States and Europe ahead of the FIBA World Cup in China. Iron Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Babs Ogunade is the vice president of the Nigeria Basketball Federation. He says the federation is determined to ensure that the country's men's national basketball team, also known as the Tigers, do well at the FIBA World Cup. Nigeria is in Group B with Argentina, Russia, and South Korea at the World Cup to be hosted by China from August 30th to September 16th. Ogunade says the scouting team set up by the federation visited the United States of America and Europe to look for Nigerian basketball players.
In preparing for the World Cup, our coaches and board members have been involved in scouting for all players. We will prepare. We have a good crop of athletes that we have invited. The scouting team just came back. We have about 8 NBA players who have signified their interest to come. We're speaking to them. The reason why they have come is because they also know that we have changed the narrative. We have spoken with these players. Some of them in the NBA, some of them playing in Europe. And of course, from the crop of players that had qualified us for the World Cup before now. So we are putting together a collage of all of these players.
The top official of the Nigeria Basketball Federation says Grade A international friendly games have been arranged for the national team to prepare them for the World Cup.
We have different styles of playing basketball. And I'm sure that that is one of the reasons why we have put together programs where our team will be playing different teams from different areas of the world. To look at the style of play, we are playing in Dominican Republic, which is not a regular basketball style that we are probably used to. We are playing in Canada. That's one of the programs that we have put out to prepare our team for the World Cup.
Ogunade says the Nigerian team will also play Poland and Montenegro before the World Cup. He says the team will return to Nigeria to camp and play some friendlies at home. On the Basketball Africa League, introduced by the National Basketball Association, Ogunade says the program will raise the standard of the game in the continent. He says players and FIBA member countries and basketball community in Africa will benefit from the league.
It's something that we will work assiduously for it to succeed. But I do not think that it is a bad thing for the NBA to come into Africa. No, it can only benefit Africa. To that extent, I am hoping that whatever it is that the NBA and FIBA will do will ultimately be to the benefit of Africa, Nigerians, and basketball at large.
The NBA has appointed Amadou Galofol, a Senegalese, as the president of the Basketball Africa League.
I think now having this elite professional league complete the pathway to grow the entire ecosystem. This is really what we set out to do. We wanted to grow the sport, not just at grassroots level. That was an important step, but now linking it all the way up to the professional ranks. And I'm very excited about the opportunity to continue the building process.
The league will feature 12 clubs in Africa and will begin next year. This is Mike Mbonye for the Sunny Side of Sports in Lagos, Nigeria.
Thanks, Iron Mike. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Both the NBA and FIBA say the new Basketball Africa League will be a showcase to grow new talented players. With the support of Africa-born former NBA stars like Dikembe Mutombo, young players are already getting support to move up to the next level. Elizabeth Casimir reports from Luanda, Angola.
Former NBA star and Hall of Famer Dikembe Mutombo has helped set up an NBA-supported clinic to train and observe new talent in Luanda, the capital of Angola, where he made a visit last week.
It's all about tomorrow.
Dikembe is following his roots as he was born and grew up in Kinshasa, a 45-minute flight from here before he became an NBA All-Star.
I think my presence means a lot to show to the young people who are playing the game here that we still care about them, we're following them, we want them to succeed, and we want the game of basketball to continue to grow in the continent.
The clinic has been organized by Will Voigt, an American basketball coach who is currently the head coach of the Angola national basketball team. After training Nigeria, he is now helping Angola to build the next generation of players.
So we're trying as best we can to give them a fair opportunity to learn, to grow. And we've already seen, you know, what players from the continent can do when given that.
Olumide Oyedeji, one of the former NBA players who came with Dikembe, believes that African basketball is growing and that it has overcome the times when the game was dominated by a few countries like Angola and Egypt. He hopes one day an African national team may reach the FIBA World Top 10.
I believe we have a chance. We have to just continue, keep playing, keep getting better. They said the journey of 1,000 might start with a step. I believe we're taking the right step.
As the search for new talent takes place, Angola hosted the final of the FIBA Africa Basketball League 2019. Local home team Primeiro de Agosto won the competition, beating Association Sportive de Salé 83-71 to get a record 9th African title.
The concept of this is Africa. It's not a national. It's Africa at all. This is why we give opportunity for the teams to have a part of foreign players, to have two African teams, two African players.
The new league, to be known as the Basketball Africa League, or BAL, is scheduled to play in January with 12 teams from across Africa. The teams will be chosen through regional competitions and the top teams will advance to the BAL. For VOA News, Elizabeth Casimiro from Luanda.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, two of the greatest men's players are getting ready for a French Open showdown in Paris. Joining us with that story is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer are set to renew their on-court rivalry in a much-anticipated semifinal match. Nadal made a smooth entrance into the semis after a straight-set win against Japan's Kei Nishikori, and afterwards, Nadal said he looks forward to his next match against Federer.
Personally, for me, the main thing has been the semifinals. No, then the way that I have been playing have been going is very positive. I have been playing well, solid, winning good matches against tough opponents like today. So I'm happy with that. Of course, after having Roger in front in the semifinals is an extra thing. We shared it. The most important moments of our careers together on court, facing each other. So it's another episode of this. I'm happy for that and excited. Now it will be a special moment, and let's try to be ready for it.
The number two seed will face Federer on Friday for the 39th time and the first time in 2 years. Nadal leads 23-15 in head-to-head duels overall and 5-0 at Roland Garros. But despite his edge, Nadal says he's never sure what to expect from Federer.
There is no two matches the same, you know, and all the matches are different because we always try things. Let's see. Let's see what's going on. I really expect that he's going to play aggressive, changing rhythms, going to the net. That's my feeling that he's going to try to play that way because he's playing well and he has the tennis to make that happen.
Nadal says he's pleased with his performance at the French Open tournament, and the Spanish star says he'll use the time before the match to clear his head.
2 days off is the moment to stay a little bit away of all of this, and you know, after tomorrow start a little bit. No, yes, tomorrow is, you know, to be a little bit the freedom, you know, with the mind clear, enjoying family and practicing a little bit, but without many goals. Probably tomorrow, just to move a little bit the body, and after tomorrow start to think about what we want to do. No, but it's always a big match against him. You know, the level of tennis that you need to play always is the highest, and I am playing well, but I need to play very well against him, so I hope to be ready to make that happen.
Roger Federer has reached a record-extending 44th Grand Slam semifinal, but his advance into the semis was an uphill battle. The world number two Swiss needed to step up his game against countryman Stan Wawrinka, and Federer says it's now time to solve the puzzle of his next opponent.
I got 2 days, which I guess is a good thing. You know, it's better than one. It's better than none. So from that standpoint, I get more left-handed practice, more serves and all that stuff, because I guess I've played five guys now, you know, that are righties. So for me, it's a complete switch around. And it's just, you know, the way the ball goes out of your strings with the different spins, it's just different. So you have to get used to that quickly. Don't have much time to waste, and that's why you have to be fearless to some extent, you know, to take on the spinny balls, the sliding balls, the kicking balls, you know, and that's what I will do on Friday.
And Federer needs to do it on the clay court, where Nadal is known to dominate. The last time Federer beat Nadal on clay was in 2009 in Madrid. And he says it's known that if you want to win a clay court title, you have to first get through Rafael Nadal.
Like against any player, there is always a chance. Otherwise, nobody will be in the stadium to watch, because everybody already knows the result in advance. And I think sport does that to you, that every match needs to be played before it's decided. And that's exactly what everybody believes by facing Rafa. They know it's going to be tough, but you just never know. He might have a problem. He might be sick. You never know. And you might be playing great, or for some reason he's struggling. Maybe there's incredible wind, rain, 10 rain delays, you just don't know. And that's why you need to put yourself in that position. For me to get to Rafa is not simple. I took five matches here for me to win, to get there. And that's why I'm very happy to play Rafa, because if you want to do or achieve something on the clay, inevitably at some stage you will go through Rafa because he's that strong and he will be there. So I knew that when I signed up for the clay that hopefully that's going to happen. If I would have had a different mindset to avoid him, then I should not have played the clay. So I think by that mindset, I think it helped me to play so well so far this tournament.
The two men take center stage on Friday. Roger Federer is aiming to win the French Open title for a second time, while Rafael Nadal is going for title number 12. Stay tuned, sports fans. And that's all from me for now. Sonny, back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In Paris Wednesday, Gianni Infantino was re-elected as president of football's world governing body, FIFA, for a second term. The bald-headed 49-year-old Swiss-Italian was re-elected until 2023 without opposition at FIFA's annual Congress in the French capital. Infantino succeeded Sepp Blatter in 2016, and his re-election on Wednesday was marked by a round of applause. In a lengthy speech at the Congress, Infantino focused on the relative calm of his first term in charge compared to the situation he inherited. The FIFA president said, and I quote, "Nobody talks about crisis at FIFA anymore or rebuilding it from scratch. Nobody talks about scandals or corruption. We talk about football. We can say that we've turned the situation around." On the football front, Infantino is credited with expanding the Men's World Cup from 32 teams to 48 for the 2026 tournament, which will be held in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. In March, FIFA approved Infantino's plans for a 24-team Club World Cup starting in 2021, despite top European clubs saying they would boycott the tournament. Infantino's re-election comes 2 days before France faces South Korea in Paris in the opening match of the Women's World Cup. Meanwhile, the field is now set for the quarterfinals at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Poland. Women's World Cup, Under-20 World Cup, Men's World Cup. My cup runneth over on the Sunny Side of Sports. My cup runneth over. But let's get back to that FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Poland. And let's take a look at the quarterfinal matchups. On Friday, Colombia will play Ukraine and Italy will take on Mali. And on Saturday, the United States will go against Ecuador and South Korea is matched against Senegal. The Senegalese boys advance Monday with a 2-1 victory over Nigeria. In results Tuesday, Mali edged Argentina on penalty kicks 5-4, after the teams drew 2-2 during regulation and extra time. The United States edged France 3-2. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to American striker Sebastian Soto, who had 2 goals for the USA. And in an all-Asian match Tuesday, South Korea edged Japan 1-0 on a late goal from Oh Se-hoon. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In pro boxing, former world heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua issued a video Wednesday after surprisingly relinquishing his titles 4 days ago to Andy Ruiz in New York City. Let's listen to what AJ has to say.
What's happening, people? I hope you're well, live and direct from New York. Still out here, it's the afternoon. It's a nice day outside. A few days after the fight, we've had time to reflect, think about certain things. Losing isn't in anyone's nature, whether you're playing chess, PlayStation, or competing at a high level in sport or in business. And I took my first loss. How to explain that feeling? It's happened to me before, but I feel like those times I lost years back have made me a stronger person, and it hasn't really changed me and my work ethic, my mindset and what I stand for. The people I'm still loyal to, my trainer Robin McCracken, my amateur coach at Finch ABC, still going to work with these guys, they're still going to teach me everything I need to know. They've done a great job for me, not only inside the boxing ring, but mainly as a human. They really developed me as a person, which is important. And these guys have been with me for years, my whole management team, and to my supporters as well. I'm not going to change on you and act any different and change my ways. I'm still me, I'm still the same old Anthony Joshua. I'm not speaking in third person, but I'm still the same old Anthony Joshua. The same motivation and trying to better myself through boxing. So about the fight, look, the whole training camp team pulled together and done a great job. I started my camp off in Sheffield, which I normally do anyway. Was working there for about 6 weeks, 7 weeks, cracking on. Come to New York, continue my press tour. There's a lot of issues going on with this fight with Jerome Miller, Ortiz pulling out, Ruiz stepping in. But it all makes for the drama show, the entertainment of heavyweight boxing. So I travelled here, I've done my press conference, and then I've gone to Miami. But the setup was spot on. You know, I didn't go out, I just went for lunch one day, out in the open. Other days I had the chef in-house, was cooking, eating in-house and so on. So no contaminated food. I know there's a lot of like accusations and worries about what was wrong with me. But I want to tell you this, I'm a soldier and I have to take my ups and my downs. And on Saturday, I took a loss.
Anthony Joshua didn't just take a loss on Saturday. He took a humiliating loss to Andy Ruiz at Madison Square Garden in New York City. During Tuesday's show, I chatted with Namdi Hollywood Moeta, our reigning prince of pugilistics. And in Namdi's words, the AJ brand has been badly damaged. Meanwhile, promoter Eddie Hearn announced on Twitter that an immediate rematch between Andy Ruiz and former champion Anthony Joshua is in the works. But I got to go back to Namdi Moeta. He says Andy Ruiz holds the belts and he holds the cards. So nothing official about a rematch between Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz. So we'll have to wait and see whether that indeed happens. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the June 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Rob McLean. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa both won. But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this
nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever.
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Sleep deprivation has long been linked with having a higher risk for cardiovascular disease and even death from coronary heart disease. A study published in the journal Psychosomatic Medicine suggests one possible reason is that having a bad night of sleep can cause blood pressure to spike. The researchers studied 300 men and women between the ages of 21 and 70 with no history of heart problems. The participants wore portable blood pressure cuffs and had their blood pressure randomly measured over a two-day, two-night period. To gauge their sleep efficiency, they also wore devices that measured movement as they slept. The researchers found that the participants with lower sleep efficiency readings also showed an increase in blood pressure during the night and a higher systolic or upper number blood pressure the following day. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs, such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
VOA.
This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. U.S. President Donald Trump joined British Prime Minister Theresa May and other world leaders for a D-Day commemoration ceremony in the southern British city of Portsmouth today. AP's Sagar Magani reports.
In Portsmouth, where many Allied troops began their trip across the English Channel to the Normandy beaches, a ceremony marking the invasion that helped free Europe from Nazi Germany.
Our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor.
President Trump reading from a prayer Franklin D. Roosevelt delivered to the nation in 1944 as the invasion was underway, what FDR called a struggle to preserve civilization. The focus tomorrow shifts to France, and surviving D-Day veterans like John Rahn have been making a final trip to salute the fallen.
It's a last hurrah.
I'm Sagar Magani.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth also took part in the commemorations, offering a personal thank you.
It is with humility and pleasure, on behalf of the entire country, indeed the whole free world, that I say to you all, thank you.
President Trump is now in Ireland on his first visit to the country as president. In a rare confrontation, Republican senators are declaring deep opposition to President Trump's threatened tariffs on all goods coming into the U.S. from Mexico. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
There is not much support in my conference for tariffs, that's for sure.
But it's unclear if they have the votes to stop the president. All sides, including officials from Mexico meeting with Trump negotiators in Washington this week, remain hopeful that high-level talks will ease the president away from his threat. The tariffs are scheduled to be imposed on Monday. From Washington, this is VOA News. The U.S.-based democracy watchdog Freedom House says press freedom is declining around the world. In its annual report, the non-governmental group says global press freedom declined to its lowest point in more than a decade. The report cites continuing crackdowns on independent media in authoritarian states and unprecedented threats to journalists in traditionally free societies. Russia has denied it informed President Trump that it is pulling defense personnel out of Venezuela. This contradicts a tweet by Mr. Trump earlier this week. Mr. Trump said Russia has to get out of the South American nation back in March after it landed planes carrying supplies and technical advisors to help President Nicolas Maduro amid an uprising. The United States is seeking the ouster of Maduro, an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, as thousands of Venezuelan citizens take to the streets to protest his regime. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports 96 refugees and migrants freed from a detention center in Libya's capital, Tripoli, are being kept in a safe place until they can be transported out of the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The group of refugees and migrants released on Monday is originally from Somalia, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. They include two newborn babies. The UN Refugee Agency reports they are being well cared for in a facility that will shelter them until they are able to leave the country. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says his agency is providing them with food, shelter, medical care, and psychosocial support to help them deal with the trauma of their recent detention. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Local authorities in northern Syria have reportedly transferred eight American women and children back to the U.S. They were captured with members of the Islamic State. AP's Karen Chamas reports.
The group is reported to include two women and six children. A Kurdish official who reported the news said they were returned at the request of the U.S. government and based on their own desire to return without any pressure or coercion. The official didn't identify the women and children involved. It is the second such repatriation from Syria. Earlier this year, an American woman and four children were returned to the U.S.